Do they do it on a form, or do they just tell you? How do they? And that's the question I'm going to keep asking throughout the course of the day. And the question that you want to ask, how do we collect this? So how does your social service person do this? Do they do it every time for every MDS?
I think they do it on admission.
Okay.
With their initial assessment of that.
Okay, so if it's done, then on the quarterlies and stuff like that, how do they do it then? Okay, she says she doesn't know. She knows she does it maybe on admission with the social service stuff, but what about the quarterlies? Again, that would be a key question, is that if this individual is responsible for doing it on each assessment, well, how are they doing it? So the next one is that you could use a very structured test, like if, come back, ho! I see all and hear all. Don't make me come out there. I'll keep you till 4 o'clock. 5, 6! Anyway. I'll be all by myself. Or you can use a more structured test. Like, for example, they say you can go in there and ask them, remember these three things. And then you talk about something else, and at the end of 5 minutes, you ask them what those three things were. But let me make a little suggestion for you. You want to mix up the three things. Because I had one facility, no kidding, that they used the same three things over and over again. They used ball, cast, string. And even the most demented person knew this, so when they saw the social services person walking around, they start going, ball, cast, string! So you gotta kind of mix it up a little bit, because they can learn. But here's my question, is that ask yourself right now, who's responsible for this? And do they know it's memory recall within a 5 minute time frame? So it's not saying, okay, remember ball, cat, string. Okay, now what was I just told you? That is not memory recall over 5 minutes. You want to wait within a 5 minute window and then ask again. And this is key for money. Okay, this is the impaired cognition RUG category. This is important for the quality measures. There's a quality indicator, incidence in decline in cognition. So this is a very important section on the MDS. So you want to make sure whoever is responsible for this understands what to do. Okay? Now, most people say that sometimes social services uses a mini mental. Does anybody here use a mini mental? Okay, and someone please enlighten me. What is the purpose of a mini mental? To get a baseline. So is it trying to figure out their level of cognitive performance? But it gives you an idea of where they are. Something. How often do you do it? Okay, she said at least annually, but possibly with a significant change or with a comprehensive MDS, right? But is there something that the MDS offers that does the same thing? Is there something that the MDS can at least give you that basically measures the same thing? Do you use it? Well, what is it? She said the RAPS. That's not it. It's actually in the next, it's on page what? I put it on page 85 of your handout. This is a golden chicken opportunity. It's called the Cognitive Performance Scale. The CPS. Have all of you seen this before? Let's explain this to you. This is the Cognitive Performance Scale. This has been in Appendix F of your training manual since 1995. And in your defense, they never even talked about the Cognitive Performance Scale until 2002. But it's been in there. And the whole purpose of this scale is to almost mirror the mini mental. And guess what? It is authored with every single MDS you do, whatever kind, whether it's quarterly, Medicare 30-day, 5-day, MPATH, admission, significant change. It doesn't make a difference what kind of MDS you do, because it's only based on like about 5 questions from the MDS. And so if your MDS software is worth its salt, if it can figure out a RUG category based on those 108 fields, well, then it can calculate the CPS score based on 4 or 5 questions from the MDS. It should, and then guess what? Then all of a sudden, from a social services standpoint, you don't have to do something quarterly. I mean, you don't have to do something because every single quarter or every single MDS, you're going to have a CPS score on somebody. And it mirrors the many men. If you look at the bottom, it's got 0 through 6 as a CPS score, but underneath that, you'll see the equivalent many mental score. And one of the things that the MDS training manual says, like in chapter 4, that facilities that use assessment tools that basically measure the same thing as a poor use of clinical time. And so, like, for example, I bet you all of you do some kind of falls assessment. And my question is, why? There's a falls wrap. Why do you do another assessment when the purpose of the MDS and the falls wrap is to do the exact same thing? And you can do a falls wrap whenever you want. You can say, well, you don't do a falls wrap until the 14-day MDS. You can do a wrap whenever you want to. There's nothing that says I have to wait till the 14th day. If the person falls on admission, I can do the falls wrap. There's nothing that prevents you from doing any of this stuff. But what they're saying is that when you create new assessments that basically measure the same thing that the MDS is trying to do, that's a poor use of your time. That's up to you. But I want to tell you that the cognitive performance scale is there. It's in Appendix F. Its sole purpose is to help you identify their level of cognitive loss. Okay? And that was what I just wanted to point out. This lets you know that something was there that could help. All right, so the keys for short-term memory is this. This is also what I would ask you, is that observe the resident functioning in, in multiple daily activities. So my question is that whoever is responsible for doing this assessment, I would ask them, A, did you just do the assessment one time? Or B, did you do it over multiple times of the shifts, over different shifts, over different days? Asking people, why? Because this item on the MDS wants the most representative level of functioning. If they're okay during part of the morning, but they poop out in the afternoon and nights, well, then that's their most representative level of functioning. That's the score that goes on the MDS. So they say a single observation may not provide enough information for you. So even from a social services side, if they go in and do one assessment, are you really getting an accurate representation of the individual? So again, here's another thing I would ask. Of the person who's doing this, when are they performing the assessment? Are they doing it on day 1 of the observation period, or are they doing it on day 7? This should be done on or about the 7th day of the assessment, because this is a look back period of 7 days. What was their functioning like over that time frame? And it may sound like I'm harping on this one a lot, but this is one question on the MDS that influences all 4: plan of care, money, quality indicator, quality measure. All 4 are this question. Okay? Oh! B4 on the MDS. This is decision making skills. Oh, I don't like, this is also the other factor that with B2A puts somebody at high risk for, was it incontinence? But out of all the questions on the MDS, I think I like this one the least. And an FYI for you, that I'm not sure if any of you took a look at the MDS 3.0. There was a draft version that came out April of 2003. And I want to explain something to you about the draft 3.0, and it's probably going to be in many, many reiterations since that time. But you have to realize that this is a golden opportunity for nursing home providers. That the first 2 versions of the MDS, you had no voice in. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. They basically gave you a form. They basically gave you manuals to fill it out. But the 3rd version of the MDS, they said, hey, give us your opinion. And they put it out on an MDS 3.0 website, and they valued your opinion even more than me. Now, why would that be? I'm the big A. Why would they value yours over me? Because you fill it out. I don't fill out MDSs on anybody. I may fill them out in my head on people that I see, but I don't fill them out. But you know what? Here's the key about that, is that they gave you this document and said, give us your feedback. And if you don't take advantage of this, then shame on you again. You cannot sit back and passively wait for the next version to come out and say, oh, here comes another one. Because they said, what do you think? give us your opinion. And you and many people voiced their opinion, and I had done my very first speaking engagement in New York was to talk about the draft 3.0, saying please make your comments because, and I'll give you a classic example of why your input was important, is that in section E4, not that you care about it, but it's the section that talks about somebody's behaviors. Okay, there's wandering, and it's a physically abusive, verbally abusive, socially inappropriate, and resist care. Those are the five pieces that were there. Well, they changed up the title on the draft one they threw out there for you to take a look at. They changed two of the titles to say, instead of verbally and physically abusive, it was verbally and physically aggressive. And that was okay, because abusive was sounded so negative, and aggressive sounded better. But you know what they offered for resist care? They decided to change that. Resist care means that the resident was resisting something that they were fighting or whatever the scoop was. But they changed the title of that one, and they threw out the draft one, resist the way care is given. So what does that sound like? It's you rotten facility, you. And so this is where, if you don't pay attention and voice your opinion, then you could possibly have a next version of the MBS that has something like that, and you say, oh my gosh, look, that's not very good at all, but you let that slip through your fingers and you miss an opportunity to make a change. So again, you want to keep an eye on some of these key critical MBS websites, because your opinion does count. And so this was the one that I voiced my opinion. I didn't like this question at all on the MBS. And this one's a potent question too. This is one that deals with all four areas, from money to a plan of care, to quality measures or quality indicators. And this one has to do with the residents' decisions and how they actually made decisions throughout the course of the day. And it almost appears like you're indicating whether or not decisions were good or bad. The problem with this question on the MDS, it's very difficult to distinguish between a poor decision and the resident's right to make a choice. And that's the problem with this section, because and you can't, and the key for this one is you can't base it on a single decision that they make. Because I can't say, well, because you make one bad decision, then all of your decisions are bad. Because I could say, well, gosh, anybody in here who eats a Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's and smokes, man, that's bad. I'm going to mark you as impaired. Bad decisions. So it's knowing where the choices, because you have the right to eat a Kentucky Fried Chicken. You have the right to eat at McDonald's, you have the right to smoke, right? So again, so that's the reason why this one is record the resident's actual performance in making everyday decisions. So that means, so the examples that they give you to consider are everyday decisions, like what do they wear? How do they get to the dining room? Do they know to put on the call light? Do they ask for help appropriately? Do they use assistive devices appropriately? And do you see they're trying to get you away from whether or not they blow their nose or brush their teeth twice a day. They're trying to get away from those very picky things and get more globally as to how they care for themselves. And so here are the four choices that you have for answers. Remember on the MDS, in order for someone to be at high risk for incontinence, it was short-term memory impairment, and decisions were three. Well, let me explain to you who a three is and why you probably don't have many threes in your building. A three is someone who is severely impaired making decisions. If decisions were severely impaired, that they were resident rarely or never made decisions. Whether or not that they can make them is immaterial. It's whether or not they did. So someone who's a three to me is someone where you decide when they're going to get up. You decide what they're going to wear. You decide when to take them down the dining room. You feed them. You do this. You do that. You do that. And they do nothing. Make no decisions, right or wrong, good or bad. Okay? Huh?
What if you never ask
them? That's a problem. And what if you never ask them? Well, shouldn't we be, that should be one of the first rules of working in long-term care, is that you ask residents, what outfit would you like to, not that you're going to say, well, go pick out something in your closet, but say, here are two outfits, what would you like to wear today? And so you have to give resident choices, but if you take all that away, then you have to code their actual performance. And that's the same with the ADLs. You code their actual performance and not what they're capable of. Okay, so you want to make sure that you're giving them the right to make choices, that you ask them questions as well. Now, what does rarely makes decisions mean? Well, they give you an example in the book. They say, well, you know, you're making all the decisions, but you take them down the dining room, and you're getting ready to feed them, and they clamp their mouth shut. right? They're getting their mouth shut. They're not going to open their mouth for you to feed them. And you can say, well, hey, now there's a decision. But you know what? In the course of the average day where you and I make a boatload of decisions, that's one. So that's why they would still code that person as severely impaired. So for the most part, you don't have probably many, many, many people that are coded like this, because the next step down or up is moderately impaired. These are residents' decisions were poor. They required reminders, cues, you know, of planning, or so they needed help. These are the people that are, you know, peeing in a plant. They've got the underwear on their head. They're climbing over the cycle, falling out. They're walking like this down the hallway, you know, because they, you know, these are people that are making decisions. They're just not the best ones, right? So these are people making decisions. And these are the kind of people where you're somehow involved in redirecting. You're a part of that decision-making process. That's probably where many of your residents are right there, where you're involved with somehow. They're making decisions, but you're somehow restructuring, redirecting, let's do this instead, right? Let's do that. Modified independence, people that usually can make decisions fine, except they get in a new situation. Something throws them off and they kind of get a little bit odd. They get a new roommate, new medication, new treatment, and they get thrown off course by something relatively new. And then independent is someone basically making and charting the course of their day without your input at all, it's not necessary. Okay? So that's decision making. So I gave you in part of your handout some of the questions to consider. And so these are provided in the training manual. Like, do they choose clothing? So just things to think about. So whoever is responsible for this section of the MDS has to realize that you're looking at their decision making or things over the course of the day, not just a single one. Because if you were to code me with drinking 2 liters of Diet Mountain Dew, you're going to think I'm nuts. But I wouldn't think so. So anyway, that's B4 on the MDS. Next is B5, delirium. I think we talked about this enough this morning, but I just really think it's critical for this one is that you give an in-service and teach your staff what to look for that constitutes delirium for the MDS, even to the point where one of these is predictive enough of possibly leading toward delirium. Your staff will not know to look for all those little picky definitions underneath there. They won't know that little body movement has something to do with periods of lethargy. They won't know that. But if I were the DON, I would in-service this within the next 30 to 60 days. And not just my nursing staff, but all my direct care staff. So you're looking for these things, and please let us know if they've happened. And then you're also then indicating on here whether it was new or not new. So not only would I try to chart this or collect this daily over 7 days, I would indicate that it happened, but I would also indicate whether it was new or not new, or worse. Okay? And golden chicken opportunity, name, and I already gave you some of these before this morning, so name at least two key differences between delirium and cognitive loss. Raise your hand. Okay, so it's treatable, reversible, and what about... shorter onset. Can be reversible. And is life-threatening. But I think she's close enough! All right. So, I think that's key for you to point out to your staff. That delirium, because it is life-threatening. And so these things, you're looking for those things that distinguish between cognitive loss and delirium. Okay? All right. So I think that understanding the definitions is key for this one. And I think also for, you know, DONs, administrators, keep their eyeballs out for this stuff. Tracking, this is just me personally, I think tracking is important. I think documentation should include if it's not new or if it's new or worse. They assume that you have a baseline. So this is where, especially on a 5-day PPS or just on admission, asking the family, is this normal for your mom or dad or grandmother or someone to do this? Is this unusual? Okay? Because they'll know them inside and out. So, another golden chicken opportunity so quick. Please go to Section E of the MDS, if you would be so kind. Can the following situation ever occur where you have an E1A, resident made negative statements? So look at your MDS form. Resident made negative statements. Up, and it's coded as a 1, up to 5 days a week. Can you have that coded as a 1 and E2, its sister, which indicates alterability, can that be coded as a 0? Nope, never happened. If you say yes or no, you have to give me the rationale as to why. So raise your hand and say, give me the rationale.
I'll say no because it is not altered, then it's not the same.
Okay, she says no, that you can't have that situation exist, and because if it's
not altered, then it's
altered. If not, it's already there. All right, I saw.
Yes, because
the question on the bottom there. Ow! Is that right? She did it right here. Did you hear her question? Did you hear her answer? She said that if the first individual said no, it can't be because if it was. They had it, then it was always that way. The second lady said, well, no, yes, you can have it that way, where because the first item in E1A looks over 30 days, and the second question, which is E2, is only over 7. And you know what? She's 100% correct. So the answer is 100% true. And the reason why is that E1 looks over 30 days, and E2 looks over 7. That's a great competency question to ask social services or ask anybody, because it's a great way, because it's understanding. You see what I'm saying? Because these are two questions that are sisters. E1 and E2 are sisters. One is frequency, the other is alterability, but the key difference is the time frame. And that's important to know. You ready? Bok, bok, bok. All right, display that proudly by your desk. Let's talk about E1. I talked about this earlier, that you're coding these things over the last 30 days, indicators that were observed. Now, this is a section called Indicators of Anxiety, Depression, and Sad Mood. So let me ask you a question. I've asked this before to other classes, but let's say I'm a resident of yours. There's a Little House on the Prairie marathon going on TV. And I'm watching at the end of each episode, I'm crying. Oh, poor Barry and Half-Fun, they're always in trouble. Okay, it's time for my MDS. It was in that window. Do you code me as crying and tearfulness on the MDS in this section? Do you? The answer is, the answer is yes. Because it says irrespective of the assumed cause. How do you know I'm crying for that reason? How do you know I'm not depressed when I see that I'm thinking of old farm days? Who knows what? Because the thing is that if it was easily altered, yay for the home team, but let social services decide that if it's something that requires management. The problem is that you can't hold the facts away from the MDS. And that's where you're trying to apply logic. But don't. It asks you clearly, code for indicators observed in the last 30 days, irrespective of the assumed cause. You code it, let social services sift through to find out, hey, is this indicative of a problem or is it not? Do you see the difference there? Now, this is another field. Remember, anything that's shaded in pink, Indiana folks have to provide documentation for. And this is one where you would see that Indiana would provide an example for. And let me explain to you why an example is incredibly beneficial here. And I use an example, and hopefully that poor Pauline won't have to edit this out. But the example is E1A on the MDS, resident made negative statements. Now, if you look at the definition of this one, what does the definition kind of allude to? The resident made kind of negative statements about themselves, right? Wish having lived so long, they wish they were dead. They're just, so it's very kind of self-deprecation. They're kind of very, very internalized. Would you agree? They're talking negative statements about themselves. Now, because Indiana has to put an example, that's a very good thing here. And I want to give you an example of what an actual Indiana facility wrote. They checked if somebody made a negative statement. That's cool. And so I went to go back and look to see the example that they had written, what the resident said, that would support that coding, and that's cool. Are you ready? I'm going to make you all right now temporary Indiana reviewers, and you let me know if you think that this example would fly as an appropriate example as resume negative statement. Here's what they wrote, and I'm stating quotes. When the staff member walked in the resident room, the resident said, and they quoted, "Man, your butt looks big in those pants." Now, I know that sounds kind of funny. I mean, I don't mean it to be offensive, but do you think that that's indicative of resident made negative statements for the MDS? Now, that is a negative statement about your body and about your clothing choice, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that they are making negative statements about themselves. Do you see where the example here would then say, I'm not going to code that on the MDS? So examples are a very good thing to have. I'm going to make that little comment to all of you. Consider this, because it indicates the knowledge base of the assessor. Do they understand the nature? And it also rules out opportunities to code the MDS incorrectly. Okay? So just as an FYI for you, how these codes work. Here you have E1A through P, and your three coding choices are this: 0, which means it never happened, ever, ever, not even one time, in 30 days, ever. That's why I'm always amazed when I see zeros for all of those. The next one is, let's talk about a 2 next. Indicator of this type exhibited daily or almost daily. So basically, at least almost every 30 days, out of 30 days, they had that indicator observed or heard. So if it's not daily, or if it's not never, it's going to be a 1. If it happened one time, it's a 1. If it happened 8 times, it's a 1. If it happened 4 days a week, it's a 1. So anything that's other than 0 or daily is going to be a 1. So a 1 is a catch-all. So even if it happened, if one time, you know, 28 days ago, they said this, it would be coded on the MDS. Okay? And so I had, on the very first class I did here, oh, come back! On the very first day, back in the early part of June when I did this presentation, somebody said to me, a social services said, you know what, I see and hear these things going on, and nobody ever documents them, so how can I code it on the MDS if there's no documentation to back up any of this stuff? And that's a valid point, right? But you know what my question was to her? Why didn't you document it? Huh? And her point is that it's considered a source document, but you know what? The day people, those day reviewers are looking for documentation to support your MDS. And those are things too, is that for the most part you should be, when these things are being evident, and that's why when this MDS came, the style of documentation where you chart abnormal things is really not appropriate. So that this MDS has shaken up the long-term care world, and you need to teach your staff how to document in association with the MDS, because it's not going to go away. It's not going away at all. So you need to learn how to deal with this instrument and decode it. And so it's a mind shift of all of your staff that, you know, it's a specialty to work in long-term care. You don't chart like this in a hospital or in hospice or home health. This is the specialty way of charting in long-term care. Okay? And we talked about that. And so the key for this one is that you should be tracking it on some level. This is a frequency field where you're documenting the number of days. This is an interdisciplinary data collection. I am a huge friend of social services. They are not the people that should be collecting all. I mean, they may be the authors of the section, but they're not the data collectors of this. It's every single person, whether it's the DON or the administrator or maintenance, housekeeping or laundry, I don't care who it is responsible for when they hear or see this stuff to tell somebody so it can be charted someplace. Because it can make a huge difference with regards to every section that this touches. And this touches, again, everything, all 4 sections. That's why they say, you know, maintenance, housekeeping, and laundry should be educated on this. I'll bet you they've never had an in-service on this on their orientation. And they're the eyes and ears of the facility. Okay? This one's a team effort. And this is the one where Dave, people have said, now that you're undercoating. Mood persistence is just then, it's a sister of E1. So of the mood indicators that are exhibited or documented on an E1, E2 says, okay, if the moods were somehow still present in the 7-day look-back period, then how alterable were they? So if you're not going to teach your staff to start documenting some of these mood indicators that they've seen or heard, then they need to follow up with the very next step and say, okay, I saw or heard this, but when I went to this resident and approached them, they were easily redirected or cheered up, or they weren't easily redirected or cheered up. And so E2 is a sister to E1, but only over 7 days. This is also a factor in the mood scale score. Yes? She said, if what happens if sometimes they are easily altered and sometimes they're not easily altered? To me, probably what I would say is that for the most part, then they're not easily altered. Yeah, I would say for the most part, then they're not. If they're probably going back and forth, I would probably say that they're not. There's something that we need to keep working on. And then say, well, what happens if they're easily altered for 5 minutes and they go back and do it again? And there's really no stipulation in the manual that says, well, it has to be a certain length of time. And here's a good point I want to bring up, is that the MDS is not perfect. And every single one, you're going to have a zillion questions. Well, what if this and how about that? And it doesn't, your residents don't fit neatly into the MDS and all of its questions, but you do have two sources for information. First and foremost, it's the MDS training manual, the most updated one. And that's key too, because some people don't have the most updated version. It's all free off the internet. There's no reason why you shouldn't have the most recent updated. And you need to be checking, Was Monday, this past Monday, was it the fourth Monday of a month?
Yeah.
What they, that just now dawned on me. CMS said that when they change things to the MDS training manual, it'll always be on the fourth Monday of a month. And so the fourth Monday of the month was this past Monday, which was the 28th, right? So that's when it changed. So you need to be on a monthly basis checking the MDS 2.0 website for changes, because they're not going to give you a call and say, you know, hey, Kimberly Steele, the MDS training manual's changed. You better check up on that. She better get a chicken for that. You hear that? Or maybe this guy says maybe a Snickers. So you may not be. Oh, that'd be okay too with her. All right. So you need to make sure that the first source is that, what does the training manual say? Can I find out the answer there? Because sometimes the training manual will provide you the answer. And if that's not if you can't find an answer there, then you always should check with your state coordinator. I think they provided the name and number out on the table. And I know it's just the key for that one is, I know it depends. You need to contact these people, because if you have a question on something, then at least if they can't tell you the answer, they can pass it along to CMS, and you just never know. If enough people are asking the same question, the manual might be changed because of something that you started. You just never know. But I think a lot of people had problems with the hospice, and that's why they clarified it not even a month or 2 months after the original, the April publication. So anyway, so that'd be a good question to ask. All right. Oh, ADLs! Oh, let's talk about this one. We have to. What are your thoughts on Section G? I know we talked about it a little bit, but what are your thoughts? What is the problem that you're struggling with within your facility with regards to this section? But what about documentation? People say generically documentation, but what about it? Okay. So conflicting information. But when you say that they're doing it on an ADL sheet, so how many people have created some kind of an ADL document for staff to use to collect the information for this section during that 7-day window? Okay? For those of you who don't have a grid, then how are you collecting it? For those of you who are not using a grid, how are you collecting it? Okay, observation and interview. Now here's the question. Who's doing the interviewing? The MDS coordinator. Is the MDS coordinator, I don't mean to get, it's not like I'm being a pain, but is the MDS coordinator then talking to every single person on every single shift for all 7 days? Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so there, so, but the manual does say observation and interview. They do tell you to do that. So you have one, some facilities are doing observation interviews by the MDS coordinator. You have some facilities that have created data collection forms. Is anybody else doing something different? So, or and then you have your own little thing for the PRIs, right? All right. So let me ask you a question on your forms. I'm curious about this, is that of the forms that you do, are they set up that looks like the MDS?
Yes.
All right. So let me throw an example up here for you. I just now thought of something. Hang on just a second. Let me put that up to you. Let me get someplace real quick. I want to show you an example because if it's what I'm thinking, just a second here. Now, I'm going to put this up here. I don't mean for you to have to read all this, okay? But I want to explain to you, I want to show you what this kind of looks like. Now, is this kind of sort of what you might have? What this is that you've got a snap, self-performance and support are taken verbatim off of the MDS document and put on a piece of paper, okay? And then you have either all the ADLs or the four late loss ADLs, whatever you have, and they're put over on the side. And then you have 7 days that go across the top, and you have self-performance and support, so it looks just like the MDS, right? You've got two columns. And at the very end of their shift, right, then somebody puts a value in. If they put in what the person's self-performance value was for that shift, and then they put in a level of support for that shift. Would you agree? Okay, and so for those people that are doing it interview-wise, if you were gonna interview me about bed mobility, okay, I'm the CNA, what questions would you ask me in an interview? So here I am, I'm at the nurse's station, I'm doing something, you say, hey Andrea, I need to ask you some questions about bed mobility. What questions would you ask me if you're going to get ready to code this on the MDS? Yep?
How much, what do you have to do to have that person turn over in bed?
Okay, what do you have to do to turn that person over in bed? Okay? How many people? Okay? Okay, what's your resident do? Okay, how much assistance do they need to get to a sitting position? Now, there's a little something different in there. All right. Yes? Is he planting good seeds or what? Oh, that one is worthy. That's got to be a good seed.
Yep.
That's got to be. I'm thinking that that's worthy of, how about okra? That's got some staying power. Don't you think some little bit of okra on that? Oh, maybe a chicken. Chicken or okra? How about chicken with okra? What? Chicken with okra. All right. But there's actually, and oh, come back. But there's actually one key question that nobody has asked me yet. Okay, we'll try and give you all things I heard. Moving up and back, repositioning in bed, turning from side to side, moving to and from a lying position, what I did for today. But what, there's one more key question. Okay, the opportunity, weight bearing, okay, support, okay, okay, whatever, but there's a key question, yep. Skip position, okay, we got that. Okay, we got the sliding down a bit, we got the repositioning, we got the back and forth, up and down, side to side, back and forth, up and down, we got all that, yes? How much, okay, we got that, how much they do up and down, left and right, one key question? Did you, all right, that's good. Oh, it's getting closer. Oh, it's close. Not quite. Go over there. Oh, hang on, back here. That's the worst. You're dancing. Yes. No, yeah. What the resident did, but there's a key question you're missing here. You ready?
Yeah.
So now, how many times did that happen? Oh, now that's something different. Because you know what? And here's the key for this, is that if you flip over one more page on page 90 of your handout, if you're collecting ADL information like this, my friends, you have just lost. The MDS manual is not asking you to collect information this way. Now, I'm not casting dispersions on the person who created this stuff, because you know what? When I first started the business, I created documents just like, oh, come back. I got to keep you guys focused. But I created forms just like this, so I'm right in the thick of this. But I want to point something out to you, that if you're collecting information like this, what you're asking your staff to do is make a decision on what kind of help, Yeah, so you're saying, so let's say, for instance, that for bed mobility, you say, well, I provided Andrea weight-bearing help. I had to help her sit up in bed. Well, zippity-doo-dah. But how many times did you have to do that? And that is the key, because you know what? 3-90 of the training manual, which I have it in page 90 here of your handout, will teach you, this is the flow sheet or the flow grid for taking raw data, whether it's in this format or verbal format or observation format. This is how you decide what score goes on the MDS. There is nothing that says you code the most dependent. There is nothing that says that for the ADL self-performance. You score the level of performance that occurred 3 or more times the highest, with the exception of total dependence, which has to be every time. So my question for you is, are you tracking times? Because if you're not tracking times, then you're not tracking the correct way for the MDS. And this makes 30% of your money. So let's talk about the ADL self-performance tree. I want to explain this to you. Let me show you this form up here real quick, because people in Indiana, all the places, they use this kind of form like this. I can't quite get all 7 days on here. But what will happen is, let's say, for instance, that you're taking care of me, and I'm toileting. Or let's take people that were down here, and you're toileting, and I'm independent. I go back and forth all by myself. No help from you at all. And I've done that for 20 of the 21 shifts. Okay? On the very last day, the doctor orders 80 milligrams of Lasix. Yep. Right? And so on that shift, I'm weak. I've been incontinent. You've had to care for me, lift me, take me, clean me, multiple times. But in a form like this, what they do is they say, well, let's put down Andrea's highest level of help. And that was extensive assistance. She required some weight-bearing help on our part, and it was one person that helped us, so that's a 2. So they have a 3 there, that extensive assistance of one person. So they have all zeros, 1-3 and 1-2. Most coordinators, at least that I know of, look at that and say, well, 3 happened once, so that's 1 time. And so you count the 3 once, and you don't get credit for the multiple times it happened, because no one ever told you how many times they were extensive assistance. And so if you look at that ADL self-performance flow record, I'm going to explain it to you right now. This is your guide for coding self-performance. And this impacts quality measures, quality indicators, every single thing. Here's the question that they're asking you for all 10 of the ADLs. The 11th ADL for bathing uses a whole different system for self-performance. But let me explain this to you here. This is the question that you're asking, whether in an interview or on a grid, is that, okay, was there any kind of help? So we'll say, for instance, we're looking to transfer. Was there any kind of help right here? Frequency of help, any kind, verbal, physical, total dependence, I don't care what. In combination, was there help at least three or more times? Doesn't say three or more days. Doesn't say three or more shifts. It says three or more times. And they don't say that, well, it has to be three times every day, or three times all 7 days, or three times four of the last 7 days. It just says three times, whether it's over within an hour, a day, or one time here, one time here, one time there. All they're asking was their help provided three times. And if the answer is yes, that some kind of help was provided at least three times, you go down here. Now, who sneezed? Who sneezed? How about a peppermint patty? How about a Snickers? Whee! Oh, heads up! All right. Well, let me explain this to you. So if there wasn't help three or more times, then there's only two answers that goes on the MDS for that section. And self-performance is either zero, independent, or eight, activity never happened. I want to explain this to you, to all you administrators and DONs. Your definition of independent...